I'm Tristan Bassingthwaite, and I'm a last-year grad student at UH School of Architecture. I'm in my final year. I have, like, a month and a half before graduating. For the last, like, 2 years, two and a half, it's been this one project. Some of us did the Global Track program as well, where we got to go to China for a year and did an internship there, worked for a Chinese master's degree at a Tongji University. And for a lot of us, our master's that we did there became our doctorate as well. So this is ultimately the end of a three-year project for me, give or take.
What's the idea?
The general idea is looking at the sociological and psychological needs of people in isolated, confined, and extreme environments. So habitats on the moon, submarines, drilling platforms, polar bases in Antarctica. And then once you understand those sort of issues that go beyond the pure requirements of shelter, you know, staying safe and warm and everything, you design an extreme environmental habitat that can actually allow them to sort of live happily. So instead of going to, say, the South Pole and being able to handle it, oh, I'm tough for 6 months of darkness and everything, you successfully did this expedition, I'm trying to work on habitats that would allow you to live someplace like that permanently or for an order of years and still maintain the appropriate levels of, say, social complexity, psychological well-being that will allow you to stay a healthy person. So
any particular reason you think doing this is important?
Yeah, aside from the general, like, future goal of you would need it in order to make, like, a moon base happy. You know, like, if you were going to live there for the rest of your life or for a year or 5 years, like, you want it to be more than just a little bunk in a tiny tube. Like, it should be something resembling home. But barring sort of the farther future things like that, we have, like, 50 to 70,000 people living on drilling platforms around the world. Shipping, there's the people at the poles. McMurdo's a community of like 1,000 people during the summer. Even the general design moves of how you can make these cramped interior spaces nicer, essentially. There's no reason that can't be applied to, say, dense high-rise living in Singapore, New York, Tokyo. If anybody's watched Cloud Atlas and seen that apartment where he presses the button and then, like, the whole wall lights up and the floors change materials and everything, that's, like, a super fancy thing of what I'd basically be looking at, sort of environmental manipulability, flexibility, make small places seem larger than they are, warmer than they are.
Oh, you're kidding. Huh. What have you found that people really need?
The weirdest thing is kind of like privacy. Say, like, I was on the high seas mission, and you'd think that's a very, like, private place to be. You're far removed from the rest of society and everything for a year, but because I had the five other people with me, and my, say, bedroom was made out of plywood, painted white, I could hear everything. People knew where I was. There's no soundproofing. It's a very cramped place, so you can't really ever get out of line of sight of other people. And, I mean, eventually you can't unwind or ever, you know, be someplace where you truly feel like you're alone. Or if you're, like, say, in the South Pole, like, you can be quite safe in the Bunsen Scott Station. Like, it's not going anywhere. But it's negative 50, negative 60 outside. There might be 100-mile-an-hour winds. You haven't seen your family in 6 months. It's sort of an environmental stressor that will get to you. I mean, it can be enjoyable. I know I would love to see an Arctic storm or something like that, but when it's your only environment for months and you're cut off from your social support structures and the interiors of the habitat never change, so your environment is very static, you're not getting new stimulus, it starts to really wear on you.
I could see this might be useful if we have to colonize less hospitable parts of the planet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the program taken as far as it can go, you could absolutely colonize, like, harsher parts of the planet, presuming the project gets the funding. I mean, if anything, in another 20 or 30 years with global warming, we'll have a couple more harsher places on the planet that we might be dealing with, so.
You're saying that people need privacy, then?
Oh, there's a lot of the you would need privacy, you would need connection, say, if you're in an isolated habitat, to original social networks for not even just, like, emotional support, but a lot of your self-identity starts to stem from the people you spend the majority of your time with. There's the environmental flexibility. Like, if I was supposed to be in this room for, you know, a week, like, it's fine. I've got my ukuleles, I've got some art books and everything. But if I was in here and couldn't leave the room for a year, like, I will have read everything. I've worn every outfit 100 times, or it'll feel like that in my head. It becomes such a boring, nothing place that has nothing new. It starts to drive
me
crazy.
What would you do then as a planner for this situation?
Oh, say, like, the light I've got in my little lamp over there is connected to my phone via Bluetooth, and I can change it to any color that I could possibly want, and it will strobe to music that I play with it. I can set it for my alarm. It can be bright morning blue lights or red evening lights. If I had my Bose speakers here instead of off at a friend's house, I could have ambient soundscapes, nature noises, water in the distance. At least when you close your eyes, it feels like you're in a larger place. If I had actually designed the room myself, maybe there'd be a nice panel in front of the closet that would make it look like, you know, even just a window to the outside. And then I could open that window and, oh, it'd be all my clothes and stuff. If I were far richer, I could get something like a Coalux skylight, which are absolutely amazing. They're a few millimeters thick and have... basically this compressed nanotechnology, something that you're not allowed to know how they do it, that perfectly mimics the Rayleigh scattering of the atmosphere. So once you've installed it, like say I've got my big rectangle right up there of a pretend skylight, and you turn it on, the light that's coming out of it is indistinguishable from real sunlight. So cameras can't tell the difference, you can't tell the difference. As you move, there's like a little point that kind of seems like the sun that moves as the sun would as you go back and forth, and it looks like an actual just like hole to the Mediterranean sky has been cut in your roof, but it can be turned off or on or whatever. So it lends this much more open quality to sort of any cramped interior space.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are there lots of things like that? Or what other things like that?
There's you know, general projection systems. Probably the most flexible would be inclusions for augmented reality or virtual reality, sort of like everybody knows VR, where you'd put on the heavy headset and escape to, say, a game. You can go buy an Oculus Rift right now and do climbing simulations or a number of other things. You could also use a VR headset to say I'm on Mars, I've been there for 2 years. My dad might have one of those 360-degree cameras, and maybe he just takes it around with him, puts it out at Christmas, goes to a concert in town, leaves it out, and it records all the sounds directionally as well as all the video. They send me that video. It arrives 20 minutes later because Mars is so far away. It's not the same as me, like, looking my dad in the eye, talking about things, catching up on life, but he can look directly in the camera, make eye contact. I can look around and have the entire scene change. Listen to music, watch family reactions. Like, people could look at me, I could feel like I've got eye contact, I could sort of be a ghost within these familial interactions, and maybe the only difference to me would be that nobody reacts when I speak back. Little ghost of Christmas past going on, but I would actually have a lot of familial support from something like that. The best sort of inclusion that is still being worked on, it's got a little bit of kinks, and the technology is just tiny bit behind VR, is the augmented reality. So if they were to build this into, just say, your glasses, instead of having to buy your own pair of augmented glasses, there's basically two little projectors that send information up onto the screen, and then, say, a little sensor in the front that can tell what's going on. So I might have the glasses on. I could look around my room and say in the empty spot on the wall there would be a Skype window with friends and family. And it wouldn't actually exist, but it would be perfectly set up in my glasses to only project when I'm looking at that. Or I could look up and it looked like there was clouds or jellyfish floating around the room or any number of things that would just be projected onto the lens. I could make my entire bed here just a Minecraft world and move blocks around and or make it look like a koi pond, and it would just overlay information onto the actual physical world.
Do we know that this would be equally satisfying?
Not yet. There's companies that have made some incredibly interesting things, and they're still sort of working on the technology, working on the programs. You can look at demonstrations where a person opens her hand and there's like a tiny elephant dancing, or there's jellyfish just floating around the room to make sort of an ambient relaxation scape. But because it hasn't been completely finished yet, it's still sort of a... that sounds like it'd be really, really nice. And when they finish it, we will put it in a long-duration simulation and start getting real hard data on it. But, I mean, there's plenty of people that say live in college dorm rooms for a number of years and have a grand time playing Morrowind or World of Warcraft or The Sims, and it takes on an entire digital persona for them, and it becomes a huge extension of their life. I mean, anybody can go to YouTube and see the videos of people that get cranky when their mom deletes their EverQuest profile or something, you know? Like, it becomes a very strong emotional thing.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we're already, like, I have a digital presence online with my, blog, people's social media. I mean, I probably, even though I barely use Facebook, I might actually interact with friends or something on there more than I interact with my own family, because, you know, they're living in Montana, and, you know, you talk on the phone a couple of times a month, but, I mean, how much of their life, or of your life, are they versus the people you might see every day in the Lord of the Rings universe, you know? And the computer and the things you can do on it are weirdly integrating themselves into our life, and once we get that next level of immersion with augmented reality or VR or something, like, there's going to be new possibilities.
Right, we'll be able to travel with our reality much more and so be able to live in these extreme environments.
Yeah, that's basically the entire idea. You might be in a isolated base on the moon doing work for who knows what, but when you go into your quarters, you can put on the goggles, or maybe you've got heavier equipment built into the room to actually project stuff without having to wear anything, and it can seem like any place. You know, a digital window with views to the sea or the jungle or the desert. You might have a tiny speaker hidden in the corner giving you, you know, surround sound, whatever. You know, projections of family on the wall that are actually, like, talking to you, because the moon's not that far away. You know, you'd have to tweak things to do it asynchronously from Mars, but, I mean, how can you get the full complexity, both socially and experientially, of the real world and social interactions, your family, daily life, into an isolated and confined environment is kind of the whole goal.
It's just so cool that you're doing this as part of Contact.
Yeah, I was originally sort of offered to do the Contact thing by a friend who knew another person, and I was just like, sure, I'll go talk about all this stuff, because, I mean, ultimately, Hawaii in 1,000 years... I mean, obviously, I have no idea what it might be, but, you know, I'm sure we've all got visions from the movies of a post-apocalyptic, you know, whatever escape, you know, the rest of the world, they can't cross the seas anymore, and we're isolated out here. Oh, thank God the weather's so nice, and, you know, we have to use architecture and environmental design and our resources to be able to actually sustain everybody that's here, and, I mean, Hawaii's large enough you could actually live here without having sort of the sensory deprivation. I mean, people have been doing that for thousands of years. But if we were to, say, have limited resources because we haven't been treating the environment appropriately, which we're doing, and our population expanded, which it always does, and we needed to actually have people living here where we had 5,000 people every square kilometer instead of the far less that it is, maybe 500 or 600 right now, you're going to have to put those people somewhere and keep them happy and ensure we don't end up with just racks of people plugged into the matrix, because that's the only way you can have the room to stretch your legs anymore. Yeah, definitely want to avoid that kind of thing. So, good architecture and careful management of the environment. Oh, that's just what you'll need to actually sort of make Hawaii livable in 1,000 years, presuming we sort of continue on the course we are of shipping in everything, burning oils, all the stuff going on with the watershed, Alawai. I mean, we've done all of this stuff in the last, like, much less than a century, really. I mean, multiply that by 10, add it on to an expanded population. We're definitely going to want to either change how we're behaving towards the environment here, which we absolutely should, or start to come up with very, very clever ways to house people, keep people happy, make them feel like they've got a more complex environment, since our being here is sort of reducing the complexity of the environment in some ways. Essentially, how to design to counter what we do to ourselves in the long run.
Oh, this is so interesting for you to put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, humans are our own worst enemy. We want to have, like, the, you know, these nice experiences and lots of friends and, you know, have a great time, live in wonderful places, but in order to do it, we, you know, pull all of the oil out of the ground. We're burning it at a colossal rate. We don't recycle anything. A lot of the materials we build our houses out of, even like this room, for example, I'm sure that the paints and whatever the pretend wood floor is made out of, it's at least 10-something years old, so it's probably got some VOCs that'll lend to you being a little sick. You can very much just get sick from the gases that come off of glue and carpeting or whatever else. You really need to take these sort of things into account, and it's becoming a trend now with like the WELL building standard, the LEED building standard. But I mean, we still have lead in the paint in houses all over America, and when we figure out how to sort of take care of ourselves through the materials that we use, the environment in general, by actually doing things in a recyclable manner and maybe integrating nature into our homes itself. I mean, there's no reason that I really need a completely closed everything roof here when I could have, you know, jalousy windows opening on both sides to let in the air, so I don't need AC, and I could put a solar panel on the roof. I don't need the electric company anymore. And if there wasn't some dumb law preventing me from gathering rainwater, I could run that through a carbon filter, be virtually completely self-sustaining, except for food. And, you know, if I got a little creative with the garbage that we make, you know, we'd probably start making less when we have to deal with it ourselves instead of just shipping it off to the dump. So, I mean, there's definitely lifestyle changes that everybody would need to adopt in order to sort of live with a zero footprint, but I've been reading some studies just for my dissertation, and one of them had estimated the global net carrying capacity of the Earth, like the number of humans it can sustain, period, at about 200 million less than what we've got right now. And I think you can go to like mycarbonfootprint.com or something like that, and, you know, type in your energy use, how many times you've flown, stuff like that. And even me, like, I'm using all of the resources the Earth is able to create to sustain my life by August of 1 year, and the whole rest of the time I'm biting into the future and burning systems that will slowly be less and less able to recover until we get to a point where the environment's just not going to be able to sustain us. I mean, we're using too much water, too much food, too much oil. Like, we need to be able to live with less impact, or else stuff's going to get real fast. You know, just, I don't even know what will happen, really.